Hey everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive. You know, today we're diving into something that might seem kind of technical at first glance, but the poetic structure of the Book of Proverbs.
Yeah.
But honestly, once we dig in, you'll see how fascinating it really is. I mean, this stuff is relevant even thousands of years later.
Absolutely. It's easy to think of Proverbs as just like a random collection of wise sayings.
Right.
But there's a whole other dimension to uncover when we start looking at how those sayings are actually crafted, how they use language and structure in really artistic ways.
Totally. And to guide us through this exploration, we've got a lecture by Dr. Knott Heim. He really goes deep on this whole concept of parallelism in Proverbs, especially focusing on chapters 1 through 9. You know, something that really jumped out at me was this idea that Proverbs, it isn't always straightforward.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we're going to come across some pretty blatant contradictions along the way. How about that?
Yeah, that's what makes it so interesting. It's not just like a simple rule book. You know, it's not a list of do's and don'ts.
Right.
The book actually challenges us to think deeply and to wrestle with different perspectives.
Wait, try.
Like one of the most striking examples is in Proverbs 26, verses 4 and 5.
Okay.
Verse 4 says, "Do not answer a fool according to his folly." But then the very next verse tells us to do the exact opposite. Answer a fool according to his folly. So how can both of these statements be true?
It's wild. Whoa, yeah, that's a real head scratcher. It almost feels like the book is, like, messing with us.
Well, not exactly messing with us, but more like inviting us to dig a little deeper to consider the context, the nuances of each situation.
Okay. Yeah.
But to really grasp how these seemingly contradictory statements can actually work together, we need to get a handle on this idea of parallelism in Hebrew poetry.
All right, so let's unpack that then. I've heard the term parallelism before, but I'll be honest, it's always seemed a little technical to me. So what does it actually mean in practical terms? Like, how does it work?
Well, think of the parallelism as a kind of echo effect in the poetry, you know, where an idea is repeated, but with variations in the wording or the structure.
Okay.
It's like a call and response, you know, in music. It just adds these layers of meaning and emphasis.
So it's not just like saying the same thing over and over again. There's got to be more to it.
Exactly. It's about using language in a really artful way.
I see.
And there are actually different levels of parallelism at work in Proverbs. For centuries, scholars have relied on a system developed by Bishop Loth, who categorized parallelism into three main types: synonymous, antithetical, and synthetic.
Oh, yeah. Those ring a bell. Okay. You give me a quick refresher on what each of those means, just so we're all on the same page.
Absolutely. So synonymous parallelism is when two lines express basically the same idea, but using different words.
Okay.
So like, you know, a wise person speaks thoughtfully, and then a prudent person chooses their words carefully.
Gotcha. So they're expressing the same basic concept, but with slightly different words. Okay. So what about antithetical parallelism? How does that work?
Antithetical parallelism uses contrasting ideas or opposites to really highlight a point. A classic example would be, the righteous will flourish, but the wicked will perish.
Ooh, yeah, I see that. So you've got this, like, real tension between those two lines. The contrasting words really drive the point home.
Exactly. Now, the third type, synthetic parallelism, it's a bit more complex. Loth kind of lumped a lot of different things into that category, cases where the connection between the lines wasn't so obvious, maybe more about the structure than the exact meaning. But Dr. Heim, he argues that Loth's system is maybe a little too rigid.
So it's trying to force all this beautiful poetry into these, like, neat little boxes.
Pretty much. He thinks there's a lot more nuance and variety going on than just those three categories.
Makes sense. So what does he propose instead?
Well, Heim proposes four levels of parallelism: semi-linear, intralinear, interlinear, and translinear.
Okay, wow. Those are some serious vocabulary words. So break those down for me a little bit. You know, make it make sense for normal folks.
Sure. Think of it like zooming in and out on a picture, right? Semi-linear parallelism, that's the most micro level. It's happening within just a single half verse. Like, you're adding just subtle nuance to a fragment of a sentence. Intralinear parallelism, that's what we usually think of. It's that parallelism between the two halves of a single verse, like that wise person, prudent person example from before.
Okay, got it. So it's two down. What about the other two?
Okay. Interlinear parallelism, this is where things get really interesting.
Oh, good.
This is parallelism between two consecutive verses. So remember that seemingly contradictory example from Proverbs 26.
You mean the do not answer a fool?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do not answer a fool and then answer a fool.
Oh, wow. Yeah, now it's all clicking. So that's interlinear parallelism in action, like two verses right next to each other, but creating this mind-bending paradox.
Exactly. And Dr. Haim points out that this is very much an intentional technique, not a mistake or a contradiction. It's designed to make us stop and think. And then that final level, translinear parallelism, that takes us to the widest zoom level. This is parallelism across lines that are actually separated by other verses, right? It's like finding these hidden connections across a longer stretch of the text.
So we've got all these different levels of parallelism working together, creating this incredibly intricate tapestry of meaning in Proverbs.
That's the idea. And what's even more fascinating is that Dr. Haim suggests this imprecision that we sometimes see in parallelism, those places where things don't line up perfectly, is actually on purpose.
Wait, hold on. Intentional imprecision. That sounds kind of counterintuitive.
I know, right?
Why would the poets do that? Like, what's the point?
Well, Haim gives a few reasons for that. One is that it allows them to pack more information into a verse without getting too wordy. It's like a poetic form of shorthand.
Okay.
And then it introduces a certain amount of ambiguity, inviting multiple interpretations. It's almost like they're saying, hey, don't just take my word for it. Think for yourself.
So it's not about finding the one right answer, but more about engaging with the text, wrestling with those different layers of meaning.
Exactly. Dr. Haim is really encouraging us to move beyond that kind of rigid, rule-based approach to reading Proverbs.
I like that.
To embrace a more flexible and imaginative mindset.
Yeah, it's like he's saying, don't just analyze the poetry, experience it.
Right. And this shift in perspective, it becomes even more important when we look at the overall structure of Proverbs, especially chapters 1 through 9.
Oh, interesting. What's so special about the structure of those chapters?
Well, Dr. Haim points out that Proverbs 1 to 9 is actually structured as a series of lectures, each with an introduction, a main body, and a conclusion. And guess what?
What?
We see a lot of these what are called variant repetitions, where phrases or verses are repeated with slight variations sprinkled throughout those introductions.
So it's not just this random collection of sayings. There's an intentional design at play here.
That's the suggestion. It points to a high degree of editorial intentionality. It's almost as if someone carefully crafted these lectures to be read together as a cohesive unit.
Okay, my mind is officially blown. We've gone from, like, these simple wise sayings to multi-layered poetry, hidden structures, deliberate contradictions. This is amazing.
Yeah, it's a lot to take in.
I need a moment to process all of this. We've got these different levels of parallelism. We've got purposeful imprecision, this intriguing structure in Proverbs 1 to 9. It's a lot to absorb, but incredibly fascinating.
It is. But keep these ideas in mind, because in part two, we're going to delve even deeper into those variant repetitions and explore how they add even more nuance and complexity to the wisdom of Proverbs.
Welcome back. You know, after that last deep dive, I'm looking at Proverbs in a whole new way. It's not just about memorizing those pithy sayings. It's about, it's like we're engaging with this really rich and complex web of language and ideas.
Yeah. And, you know, in this segment, we're going to focus on one of the techniques that Dr. Haim highlights, variant repetition. It's almost like the poets are playing this game of spot the difference with us, you know, using these little variations to add depth and nuance to their message.
Okay. I like that. So we're talking about those places where a phrase or even like a whole verse shows up in different parts of Proverbs, but with some slight changes, like little tweaks here and there.
Exactly. And these variations, they're not just random accidents.
Right.
They're really deliberate artistic choices, and they can unlock these new layers of meaning for us. Remember that that mind-boggling contradiction we talked about earlier from Proverbs 26:4-5? Do not answer a fool according to his folly, but then right after, answer a fool according to his folly.
Oh, yeah. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that one.
Yeah.
How can both of those be true?
Well, believe it or not, those two seemingly opposite verses are actually a really great example of variant repetition in action. They're presenting the same basic idea, but that subtle shift in the wording, adding that do not, it creates this powerful tension that forces us to think more carefully.
So it's like the poets are intentionally setting up a puzzle for us to solve, huh?
Yeah, in a way, yes. Like they're saying, here are two sides of the same coin. Now it's up to you to figure out when to apply each piece of advice.
I like that. Yeah, it's like they're giving us the tools to navigate like the complexities of life. Mm-hmm. It's not just a set of hard and fast rules. But how do we know? Like when to answer a fool and when to hold our tongue? Like how do we apply this?
That's the beauty of it. There's no easy answer.
Right.
The book invites us to consider the context, to weigh the consequences, and to rely on our own wisdom and discernment. But Dr. Haim, He offers us some helpful clues when he points out that a lot of these variant repetitions, they actually occur in the introductions to those lectures we discussed earlier.
Oh, you mean the ones in Proverbs 1 to 9?
Right, yeah.
Where each chapter is kind of like a mini lecture,
mm-hmm.
with the introduction, the body, and then a conclusion.
Exactly. And when we see these variant repetitions popping up in those introductions, it kind of suggests that these seemingly separate lectures are actually interconnected, right? It's
right.
Like the poets are weaving together this tapestry of wisdom, and they're using these repeated phrases as threads to connect those different parts.
That's amazing. It's like they're creating a dialogue between different perspectives,
mm-hmm.
and kind of inviting us to see the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
But why these variations? Why not just like state each piece of advice once and be done with it?
That's a great question. Dr. Heim suggests that these variations, they serve several purposes. For one thing, they just add nuance and complexity to the text. You know, it's like seeing a painting with all the shades of color instead of just black and white.
Right.
The variations allow the poets to explore different facets of the same idea and give us a more complete understanding.
So it's like they're giving us that 360-degree view of a concept.
Mm-hmm. Precisely. And then these variations, they often introduce wordplay, too, using similar sounding words or phrases to create like a kind of poetic punning that adds another layer of depth and enjoyment.
You know, I have to admit, I never thought of Proverbs as being like playful.
I know, right?
But it makes sense.
Yeah.
These ancient poets would have used every tool in their arsenal to make their words memorable.
Yeah.
Right. And impactful.
Absolutely. And maybe most importantly, these variations invite us, the readers, to become like active participants in the process of making meaning, right?
Mm-hmm.
It forces us to slow down, compare those different versions, and really wrestle with the distinctions.
It's like they're saying, you know, don't just passively absorb these words. Get in there and wrestle with them. Figure out what they mean for you in your life.
That's a great way to put it. And that act of wrestling, that's where the true wisdom emerges, right?
Yeah.
It's not about just memorizing a list of rules. It's about allowing these ancient words to challenge us and shape the way we see the world.
Wow. This is making me rethink my whole approach to reading Proverbs. So instead of getting stuck on those seeming contradictions or inconsistencies, we should see these variations as invitations to deeper understanding.
Exactly. It's a reminder that the Bible, and especially its poetry, it's not just some dry textbook.
Right.
It's a vibrant, multifaceted work of art that demands our full attention. You know, we've got to be engaged with it.
Yeah.
It's meant to be savored, pondered, and wrestled with.
This has been so eye-opening. We've explored these intricacies of parallelism, those fascinating variant repetitions, the intentional structure of Proverbs 1 to 9. But I have a feeling we're just scratching the surface here. What else is in store for us as we continue this journey?
Well, in part three, we're going to dive into what Dr. Heim calls the truly unusual aspects of Proverbs. These are the moments where the poets really push the boundaries of language and structure, you know, to create these effects that surprise and challenge us in really unexpected ways.
Welcome back to our deep dive into the poetic structure of Proverbs. I'm still thinking about all those insights we uncovered about parallelism and those really clever variant repetitions.
Yeah.
But now I got to ask, what about this idea of the, what Dr. Heim calls the truly unusual in Proverbs?
Yeah.
What makes certain poetic features stand out so much that he gives them that special label?
Well, I mean, I think we often expect poetry to be, well, a bit unusual by nature. You know, it plays with language, bends the rules a bit,
right?
Uses metaphors to paint these really vivid images in our mind.
Absolutely, yeah. Poetry wouldn't be nearly as interesting if it was, you know, straightforward like a shopping list or something.
Exactly. But Dr. Heim is arguing that some of these features in Proverbs, they go beyond just the expected unusual.
Okay.
They almost make you do a double take because they're so unexpected, so surprising. And these moments, they often highlight the sheer genius of the poets, you know, showcasing their mastery of language and their ability to really twist words and create even deeper meaning.
So fascinating. Can you give me some examples of these truly unusual techniques in Proverbs? What should we be looking for?
Well, one example Dr. Heim points to is the use of ellipsis, which is basically the omission of words or phrases.
Oh, yeah, ellipsis. We talked about that before, right?
Yeah.
How it can create this ambiguity and invite the reader to kind of fill in the gaps.
Exactly. But in these truly unusual cases, the ellipsis is so unexpected, almost radical, that it disrupts the flow of the verse in a way that really makes you stop and think. You know, it's like the poet is like tapping you on the shoulder saying, pay attention, this is important.
It's like a literary jump scare. You think you're following along smoothly, And then, bam, there's this gap that you have to figure out.
That's a great way to put it. And often when we slow down and try to fill in those gaps, we end up with a much richer understanding of the text. It's like those moments of wrestling with those missing pieces that we really start to internalize the wisdom.
Okay, so ellipsis is one example. What other truly unusual techniques should we be watching out for?
Another interesting example is the unexpected use of parallelism itself.
Hmm.
Remember all those different levels of parallelism we talked about? The semilinear, intralinear, interlinear, translinear.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like this whole system of poetic echoes and connections. Now that you mention it, I'm starting to hear them everywhere.
I know, right? It's pretty amazing. Well, sometimes the poets will deliberately break those patterns in really surprising ways. You know, maybe they'll use a combination of parallel structures that we wouldn't expect or create a parallel where we least anticipate it.
So it's like they're playing with our expectations, keeping us on our toes as readers.
Exactly. It's like a musician riffing on a familiar melody.
Mm-hmm.
They might throw in a surprising chord change or a rhythmic shift that catches our attention and makes the music that much more captivating.
Oh, I love that analogy. Mm-hmm. It really highlights how much creativity and artistry went into crafting these ancient proverbs.
It's really remarkable. And you know Dr. Heim's insights, they remind us that these poets were masters of language. They knew how to use it to its fullest potential. And he encourages us to really pay attention to these truly unusual moments, not to see them as errors or inconsistencies,
right,
but to see them as these deliberate choices, artistic choices that contribute to the beauty and complexity of the text.
So it sounds like we need to approach Proverbs with a sense of wonder and curiosity. Be ready to be surprised.
Exactly. Yeah, don't be afraid to slow down. Really savor the language, ponder those paradoxes, you know, even embrace the ambiguity. The Book of Proverbs, it's not supposed to be just a simple set of rules. It's a vibrant, multi-layered work of art, and it rewards our careful attention and reflection.
It's like those optical illusions where you can see different images depending on how you look at it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Proverbs, it offers that same kind of depth and complexity.
Yeah. I like that. That's a great way to put it. And as we wrap up this deep dive into the poetic structure of Proverbs, I think the biggest takeaway for me is this. Don't be afraid to really dig beneath the surface. The real treasure is in that journey of discovery.
Yeah, I agree. So to all our listeners out there, I encourage you to go back to the Book of Proverbs with fresh eyes and ears. Take a new look with this newfound appreciation for its intricate structure, its poetic structure. Don't just skim the words. Really dive in, explore, and allow the wisdom of this ancient book to surprise you. And that's it for this deep dive. We'll see you next time.